No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Today we're going to wing it. We don't have any guests, just me and Kathleen, so please call in, because Kathleen doesn't let me talk very much. And if you call in, maybe I'll get a word in edgewise. But before we get started, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen, who is here in Washington for a second week. Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for getting the conversation started.
Well, hello. How are you doing, Senator Brown? How is everything with you? Although you're in a different level. And I think that sometimes that's the way it is. We're all on different levels. But I'm doing good. Beautiful weather here in Washington, D.C. Couldn't ask for a better time.
Yep. And I almost didn't get on today because I couldn't find my password. It was taped to the top of my computer 16 inches in front of me. But I'm old and I couldn't see it. So we had an emergency. I'm sorry we're a couple minutes late getting on the air. But that just goes to show you, don't get old, people. Stay young. So, well, I want to start out tonight by talking about what's going on in D.C. We have this guy, Thomas Massie. He's a Republican from Kentucky. Of course, why are they always Republicans, Kathleen?
I don't know. It's mesmerizing. I've been trying to contemplate that issue.
But this week, he tried to put a gun rider on our budget, which would make it impossible for the police in the District of Columbia to enforce the D.C. gun laws. Now, imagine this. In the place where the President of the United States, members of Congress, diplomats, world leaders, and millions of tourists come every year, this guy wants to make it impossible for the District of Columbia police to enforce our gun laws. And in one of the most brilliant statements that I've heard in years, he says he wants to protect everybody's God-given right to bear arms. Now, I don't know what book he's reading or what God he's praying to, but I'm really not so sure that God believes that everybody has a right to have a gun. I don't think that God's an advocate for the Second Amendment. He might be an advocate for the 14th Amendment, but I'm not sure he's an advocate for the Second Amendment. And this guy gets my Idiot of Congress Award for the week. And that's really saying something with this Congress when you're the dumbest guy in Congress. And he's right up there. Rand Paul has been doing this, also from Kentucky. Isn't he a wonderful guy? What's wrong with the people of Kentucky? Elect some people that have half a brain, please.
Well, before you get everyone all upset that live in Kentucky,
yeah.
One thing that you pointed out to me, which is interesting, when you said that, you know, everyone refers to the Second Amendment as the right to bear arms. But you brought a point when we were discussing it earlier, that what the amendment also says is that it's a well, isn't the first words that there be a well-regulated?
Yes. The first words of the amendment are a well-regulated militia. Those are the first three, first four words, I'm sorry, of the amendment. A well regulated. They always seem to forget that.
So what do you think regulated may have meant to them back in 1776?
Well, you know, that's a issue of great debate. And I think that, you know, some people think it means regulated in the military sense of being disciplined and, you know, orderly. But I think it means, I think it also means regulated in the most common sense of the word, that the government has a right to determine how who has arms and how it's set up. It regulated. I mean, that's pretty simple. And the amendment actually reads, a very short amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So everybody concentrates in the gun movement on the last four words, shall not be infringed, and they forget the first four words, a well-regulated militia. You know, I think that you and I have had this discussion before. I think that people have a right to bear arms, and I don't want to take guns away from law-abiding citizens. But I want the police to be able to enforce our gun laws. I want there to be background checks. I don't think anybody that wants a gun should have a gun. I mean, everything that's dangerous in our society, we regulate. We regulate automobiles. You have to have insurance. You have to prove a proficiency in driving. And you have to have a license. Why? Because of the potential danger that a car poses to other people. That's the only reason. And guns, cars have a lot of uses. Automobiles, trucks, you know, vehicles have a lot of uses, but the primary use of a gun is to kill things. It's not for the primary use. It's not designed for target practice, regardless of what the NRA says. It's not regarded as a thing for your amusement or your pleasure, which it can be, but it's called a weapon. It's, you know, that's the alternative name for it. It's a weapon.
And, well, let me get a word in edgewise. You always say I don't let you in, but I think that this comes back to the issue too of Republicans repeatedly talk about the rights of states and that states' rights should be almost greater than that of the federal government. And the federal government should not impede on states' rights. But yet here again, they are doing that to the residents of D.C. because you do have the right to pass laws for yourself. Yet these guys from other states are now coming and deciding that they don't like it and they're going to change it because they can, because you're not a state. So it seems that we're showing a very another reason why D.C. needs statehood, because you guys should at least, I mean, you don't have the right to decide or the power to really have the last word on how you spend your budget or how it's spent or that it's spent the way you want it, because they can always come in and change that. They can always do this to you. And it's to me, it's just, you know, it's so hypocritical that I find it kind of appalling, and I just don't get why the residents in this city are not, you know, screaming. And you know, I left D.C. in 1988, and I've been back and visited. But, you know, now I came back to a city that's so different than when I left. With most neighborhoods now, I remember I lived on in Adams Morgan, and I remember not being able to cross over 16th Street, and we were at 14th and Park or Columbia Road, and I couldn't recognize where I was. It was not the place that I was used to in 1988. So you have so many people here, so many diverse. It has such a diversity that I don't understand why the people in the capital of the United States, one of the supposedly leading countries of democracy, do not get involved and stand up for their rights. It's enough to make me, you know, am I the only one that sees it? I mean, you know, it's difficult because we have, I'm going to mention, it's been canvassing and getting signatures for you actually in running for a different campaign. And I'd like to talk a little bit about maybe in the show a little bit later, but just the apathy of people in that they're not involved yet. This is the capital. This is where politics rules and people don't get involved. It's driving me crazy.
Well, you know, just to show you that great minds think alike, what you just said is what Eleanor Holmes Norton, who represents us in the House, said about the guy that put this, is trying to do this gun rider on our bill. You know, he's a Tea Party guy. And she said exactly what you said. He's always talking about states' rights. He's always talking about how the federal government shouldn't interfere with the rights of the people. But here, at the first opportunity he gets, he tries to interfere with the rights of the people of the District of Columbia. So that's, you know, absolutely the case, that these guys are hypocrites, that they're interfering on our local affairs. There's another guy from Maryland who's trying to overturn our law to decriminalize marijuana. We had a referendum, you know, which is really, when you think about it, probably the most democratic way to do things. We put something on the ballot and the people of the District of Columbia approved it. And then it went to our city council, who runs the city, and they passed it as a law, and it sat in Congress for 60 days. It's become a law, and this guy's trying to overturn it. And the most interesting thing about that is he's another one of these Tea Party nuts, and he's they have the same exact law in Maryland. And when they asked them, why would you try to overturn the law in the District of Columbia when you have the same law in Maryland, he said, because I can. Right. And I think that shows, you know, such a ridiculous arrogance about how they treat the people of the District of Columbia. And you know, besides the whole gun issue, if you want to take the gun issue out of it, yeah, it's really a matter of, self-determination and democracy that we don't have here in the district. And why people don't get upset about it, I haven't the slightest idea, Kathleen. I mean, you know that I go to rallies in front of the White House that have been broadcast to the city for months. We organize these things. And I get up there and 200 people show up in Lafayette Park, 150, 200, 300. I mean, we've had crowds as big as 1,000, but we're a city of 647,000 people without our basic human rights. And you would think more than 1,000 people, you know, more than one out of every 650 people would give a damn about this. But people just don't seem to care. And I don't know why. And
a feeling that, you know, in talking to people on the street, and I know that this radio show is based on statehood, but now, you know, everyone, there's going to be a November 4th race and everyone has to get all these signatures. And, you know, it is amazing. I don't know if they think they're passing through here, but these people end up living a long time here, but they vote everywhere else or, right, you know, they don't vote. And let me, before I continue, give out our number. So please call in. I know I've handed out the card while I've been here in D.C. to lots of people, asking them to come on to explain. There are people who don't believe in statehood, to come on and just debate the issue with us and to maybe enlighten me on why you wouldn't want statehood. I just don't understand it, because you're already paying one of the most highest rate in property taxes. So why wouldn't you want to be represented is beyond me. But it's 888-627-6008, or you can Skype us at BBS Radio 1. It's just quite appalling that you would think of anything, that the nation's capital would be savvy to the politics and how politics, you know, is in everyone's world. I have a good friend that says, well, I don't, you know, politics is not my thing. And, you know, I don't have politics here. And I would love to sit down and show her how politics affects everything, from the fact that you guys have so many of these radar, and what is it, the photo things for the cars?
The cameras. Yeah.
Oh my God. I've never, in Arizona, it's crazy, but they outlawed that. They don't accept it here. It's like every 100 yards, you got a photo camera. So it's like, it affects you, how you go to work. It affects, you know, the buses you take. It affects everything that you do. And when people say, oh, well, you know, I hate politics and it's not affecting me, I mean, they're fools. They're putting their heads in the sand because politics is in everything you do.
Well, you know, and I think that's right. And I think that, yeah, you're right. People don't connect the dots. And we say that all the time in the statehood movement, that we need to connect the dots for them. They need to see that they lose money because of this, that their schools aren't as good because of this. But there's a thing in politics I think about, people not seeing the forest for the trees and you know, not understanding the impact this has. And you and I are out there on the street seeing this right now because we're out there getting petition signatures and people, young people, right? Young women are saying, no, I'm good. And I think they just don't understand. Then young people are always complaining about the price of housing's too high. We can't do this. We can't do that. Well, you know what? We ignore young people because young people aren't involved. Older people get more attention because they're involved. You know, you and I both work for the Democratic National Committee. We both work for Jimmy Carter. You've worked for Pat Schroeder. I've worked for other politicians. We've been in politics a long time. And we understand that, you know, people on Social Security, we listen to. We go after. I was in charge of direct mail, in-house direct mail programs at DNC. Well, the average contributor to the DNC was over 50. Yeah. So we listen to those people because those are the people that participate. Those are the people that give us money. So we don't cut Social Security, but we cut education programs because fourth graders can't vote. But old people do vote. They show up at the polls. So I don't know why people don't get this. If for no other reason, you need to participate just so you make sure that you have a voice and the people that you represent have a voice. You know, how many young people do we see that go, no, I'm good. You know, I don't, you know, they just breeze right on by us. They don't want to hear what we have to say because they're tied up in their, you know, in their own little world. And I think somebody made an incredible comment this week when they said, well, these young people won't sign a petition on the street, but they'll put every personal bit of information they have online.
Or Twitter it.
You know? Right. And they'll go on. You can find out more about young people today than you can find about old people, where they are, what they're doing, who their friends are, you know, what their likes and dislikes are. But get them to try to stop for 15 seconds, 30 seconds on the street and talk to you about what's going on in their own city, and they won't do it. It's just crazy. It's crazy.
Well, you know what I've been talking, and I talked to several women who did sign, you know, young women, and I said, you know what, there needs to be a study because what is infuriating me, and I'm, you know, after doing this for 2 weeks, I'm angry right now, which is probably better than having lost all my faith in people because, you know, what I see in young women, and I can see them, and there's probably within an hour, I'll see 25 to 30 of them. They're young girls in shorts and tank tops walking down the street, and they're in every part. You know, we've been all over D.C. and in areas that used to be bad. They're walking down, you know, short shorts, tank tops, hair in a ponytail, plugged into their phone, you know, Twittering away or whatever they're doing on their phone, and they will not stop. They will not look at me. They will not even, and if they do, they're very, very rude about it. No, you know, or just not even look at me. And I'm thinking to myself, I want to stop them because I want to say, young lady, when I was your age and I was working, I was making 15 cents to every dollar that my male peers made. Now you're making 78 cents. Do you think you got there because you weren't involved, because I wasn't involved? I was involved. I worked with the Pat Schroeders and the Gloria Steinems to make sure that you're able to have a decent living. And if you sit there, you're so entitled and you're so just, you know, oh, I don't want to get involved with that. But yet, like you said, I'll put everything I do, who I date, what I drink, where I've been on Facebook for the whole world to see. But I can't take 2 seconds to see what this person who's asking me, are you a DC voter? You know, can I have a second so you can sign a petition to get somebody on the ballot? They don't want to do that. So they don't vote. That shows me they don't vote because they have no clue what's going on. I have more respect for the people that say, well, I don't know who this person is, so can you give me some information? So right. Anytime people stop and they don't want to sign or they don't know, I said, you know, listen to our radio show. Call in and tell, and, you know, and let's have a discussion about why you don't want to be involved or why are you so refraining. And, you know, the system is these signatures are to get people on the ballot so you have a choice. And then it's up to you as a voter to research and find out who these people are who are going to run for a position that's going to affect everything you do in life. And I am just crazy because we worked really hard, you know, like I've mentioned this before. If you ask these young girls who just probably graduated from college, maybe 3, 4, or 5 years at the max, and maybe they all look fit, so maybe they played tennis, or maybe they swam, or maybe they played volleyball. Well, those programs are in there because of Title IX, which made state universities that got government funding make programs, athletic programs available to young women. You know, so hello, what do you have to do? I guess maybe do you have to lose everything? All your rights to make you realize that you have something in this process?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously that doesn't even work because the people of the District of Columbia have lost the rights that we formed this country on. You know, we went to war over the idea that you can't tax people and not represent them. But these women, yeah, maybe they'll wake up when they have children and they understand that the leave policy isn't what it should be at their employment, or that they can't telecommute because they don't have the laws they need to enforce laws like they have in Scandinavia, which give people of both sexes parental leave and allow them to do things that don't interrupt their career. Or maybe they'll realize it when they hit the glass ceiling and they say, you know, you're only going to go so far. You can be a doctor, but you're most likely to be a pediatrician, which is the lowest paid form of doctor. Or, you know, I don't know when they'll realize it. Maybe they'll never realize it because, as we've already said, we have these rallies in D.C. for statehood. We try to get people out to stand up for their rights, and they don't seem to care. They don't, you know, they just don't see how it affects their lives. You know, in the case of the district, we lose $2 billion a year. We tried to put a commuter, a kind of a commuter tax where if 70% of the people that live, work in the District of Columbia live outside the District of Columbia. So this tax advisory panel suggested that we charge every employer $100 a year to help defray the cost of city roads and services and everything if you are an employee in the District of Columbia but live outside the District of Columbia. The city council turned it down. And instead, what did they do? They taxed yoga. And yes, now people are mad strange. About that. They're mad. These young women, you know, you talk about it affecting their lives. These young women who take yoga and do exercise and own gym memberships are upset because the city council has decided to tax one of their activities. It's a silly tax. The mayor has vetoed the budget on the basis of that and a few other things. His veto, unfortunately, was overturned the other day. But the city council doesn't care about you, young people, because young people don't care about politics. If you cared, if they were worried that they were going to get you upset, they might have chosen a different path. But right now, their attitude is, hey, look, you know, you don't care about you don't care about this. Who cares if we annoy you? So, you know, that's a very minor thing. It's about $6 a month for the average gym membership. But it's just one of the many ways that you don't get what you're supposed to get. I mean, education has become a really big issue in this city. And part of the reason that you don't get better education in the District of Columbia is because young people don't get involved. And then they hit their 30s, they start having kids, and all of a sudden it's important to them. Well, man, if you organize early on and start pushing for better education, you'll get better education. If you wait till the last minute and then decide when your kid, when you can't get your kid into what you consider a decent school, that it's important, or right now we're having a battle about boundaries in the District of Columbia, then, you know, the time has passed for you to get involved. So the time to get involved is now. And now that we're on the subject of states and how great it is to be a state, let me say again, and maybe you'd like to talk about this, that Arizona, once again, your home state of Arizona these days, has risen to a new level because it's gotten an F. It's gotten an F as being among the worst states for working parents. What do you think about that?
Well, it doesn't surprise me, and you know, in having lived in Arizona for 7-8 years, it has become a very extreme right wing Republican state. And I say that because there's a saying in Arizona, as Maricopa goes, so does go the state. Maricopa is basically the state of Phoenix. Phoenix is made up of Republicans, conservative people coming from everywhere else who are older, retired, and they retire in Phoenix because it's cheap. They constantly vote against any kind of bond issue that would help the education of our kids, because they're feeling, as I've done it in Idaho or North Dakota or South Dakota or Mississippi, and I don't need to educate the children of Arizona. It's a state that's very like I say, become very conservative, very right-wing, and they all reside in Phoenix and never travel outside of Phoenix, maybe go to Tucson. That's a big trip for them. So it's a state that's a right-to-work state, which in my book just means it's a right to become poor. Because, you know, I'm amazed, even here in District of Columbia, you get an hour lunch, you know. In Arizona, you got to eat your lunch in 30 minutes. You got to, you know, there's very few rights that protect the workers. So it doesn't surprise me at all, because it's a town that seems to me that has made up of wealthy retired people, and they don't want taxes. They don't want anything. I mean, it's funny. I was in Phoenix before I came out here, and I was shocked at how well the roads are. In Tucson and everywhere else, the roads, man, your car, your shocks go out really fast because the roads are so bad. It's great in Phoenix because they make sure they fund what they want in their city. But the rest of the state, well, the rest of the state can just, you know, who cares? And I become very, very disheartened by the state. And I think the reason that people don't change is because the poor, and that I see the middle class, you know, kind of vanishing in Arizona like everywhere else. You know, you're too busy just trying to pay the electric bill, you know, no less trying to figure out what the heck these guys are doing in the legislature, state legislature, you know. And it's all these politicians, you know, we're for state rights and I'm going to do stuff for Arizona. What they want to do for Arizona is have the least amount of taxes so that they can keep their wealth, and they don't want it to go to anything to benefit the poor or the people who need a little help. And it's just getting me very, very angry. But it's interesting because not only Arizona got an F, but Alabama, Delaware, Georgia, Idaho, Kansas, Michigan, Mississippi, Missouri, Nebraska, Nevada, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Utah, and Wyoming. And, you know, these are all based on things like family leave, parental leave, sick leave, things like that. And I guess maybe when I think of these young women, maybe when their child is sick and they're working and their employer says, well, I'm sorry, you only get a week of sick leave, and if you want to stay home with your child, you're just going to have to find another job. Maybe then they'll say, what happened? I thought this was a country that I could believe in and it would be helping me, and it's not. So, you know, all of this connects people. It all connects. And the least, when you sit there and you say you don't want to be involved, involved, you're creating your own worst nightmare. And you can blame the politicians as much as you want, but you have the vote. You can get these guys out. You can get people in that are right for what the job, but you got to get involved. I mean, I'm sorry if I sound very angry, but it's, you know, you sit out there for 6-7 hours trying to get people to get to sign a petition just to get people on the ballot. And I am just shocked by, you know, the attitude that most people have. Now, you know, granted, there are a lot of good people out there. We've ran into them. But for the amount of the good people who want to be ignorant it's a much larger group.
Well, you know, and that brings us back to what we were originally talking about, which is that the people of Phoenix are getting, the old people of Phoenix are getting what they want because they get involved. And the young people aren't getting what they want. And in the District of Columbia, we have a real chance here to change things because we have a group called Millennials that are moving in, and they're moving in at 1,200 people a month in the District of Columbia. So that means, you know, 1,200 people a month is a pretty astonishing amount for a single group. And we're getting, you know, these people pay, are increasing our tax base, and they're, you know, they're doing a lot for the city, but they're getting very, very little because they're not getting involved. So they need to get involved, and that'll make a difference. I mean, we're getting 15,000 new people a year, 15,000 new young taxpayers, and nothing seems to be happening for them because they don't get involved. They pay their taxes, and they're just not showing up at the polls evidently. And you know, they're not going to get stuff in the long run. Yeah.
And you know, it's interesting because you know, sitting there and actually, you know, looking at the different people that come across our path, it's amazing to me that I do find the African American citizens as a whole are much more ready to sign the petition to get somebody about. And I do have a lot of people who say, you know what, I believe in the democratic process, and I believe everyone should have a chance to run. And that gives me hope. You know, that I have had probably mostly young men, probably in their 30s, that say that. But I am really have a whole higher respect for the African-American community. And maybe they understand. They understand how politics affects their life because they're the ones that have had the, you know, the right to vote since when, right? I mean,
They've had the right to vote on paper for 150 years, but, you know, they certainly haven't had the right to vote in reality, in a lot of places, until the 1960s. So, you know, 50 years. And maybe you're right. Maybe, you know, we find that. Of course, anecdotally, you know, you can't extrapolate too much from that. But I agree with you. We find that. I find that too. And I think might have something to do with the fact that, yes, they have a better understanding because people have organized them over the years to stand up for their rights, and their rights are important. You know, you often talk about how important voting was to your in-laws who came from a communist country. And, you know, my grandmother came from Italy, came over on the boat, went through Ellis Island. She was kind of classic American in that sense. And she was the same way. She never missed an opportunity to vote because in her home country, she didn't have that right. Women didn't vote in Italy. They didn't have a government really in the area of Italy that she came from. Local bosses ran things. So when she came to the United States, she made sure she always voted. Now, she voted for a lot of corrupt Italians over the years, you know. Newark had a lot of bad mayors when I was growing up, and they all seemed to be Italian at the time. But she voted. She understood that participation in the process was really important. So I'm going to give everybody out there some homework to do until we come back on the air next time, next week. And that is, I want you to go online and take the AOL presidential test and find out which candidate you are most like. I took this test. I thought I was going to turn out to be Hillary Clinton, but I didn't. Guess who I got to be?
Now, this was just a modern president since when, like the last couple of years or what? Or is it like all the presidents?
It's like the people that are out there now in the world.
Okay. So you weren't Hillary Clinton. Were you Jimmy Carter?
No, I was Joe Biden. And I think a lot about me, you know, because I like Joe's a regular guy, right? He's sometimes he says things he shouldn't. I certainly have had that happen, but he's kind of, I love Joe Biden. I got to be honest with you. I know there's some people that don't really like, really don't like him that much in the Democratic Party, but I like him. I think he's real. I think he's honest. And that's a guy I'm dying to know who you are. I'm saying Rand Paul. Rand Paul. Who's the other one? Who's his father?
Paul. I get so confused.
Ron Paul. Either Ron Paul. Paul or, who's the other one? Ralph Nader. There you are. Maybe you're Ralph Nader. I don't know. But I'd like to see. Which one you are. So go on, people. Go on to AOL. They're doing a presidential survey. See which president you're most like. If you're most like presidential candidate Vladimir Putin, then you've got a real problem.
Let me ask you something else. You know, we're talking about the issues that maybe why people aren't going to stop, you know, and do anything regarding getting people on the ballot for the DC council. Do you think that they're, and I kind of get a underlying feeling that this may be true, that they are so disgusted with the corruption that's going on in the city that they don't want to even be involved, or that might be an issue why people don't believe in statehood, because the DC council has been corrupt for such a very long time?
Well, you know what? I think that is part of it for some people. But, there's an old saying. I think it's inscribed upon the National Archives building, and that is that all it takes for evil to succeed is for good people to do nothing. So in the face of corruption, it's even more important to be involved. It's even more important for good people to stand together and make sure they're involved in the process and they choose good people. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of people feel that, but I think they're making a big mistake by not being involved. We need good people. And you know what, Kathleen, you and I have worked in politics for a long time, so we know there are a lot of good people that are involved in this process, as well as the people that are. We've seen the people that are not good too. We've worked with the people that are not good. In fact, an old dear friend of mine, when I worked at the DNC, a guy named Mike Caberline, left me a saying when he left. When he left the DNC about politics, and it said, "Don't forget that the cream always rises to the top, but so does the scum." And I think there's some truth in that, you know, that some really, really good people change the world and make it to the top. But I think some really, really bad people get up there, too, and that, we have to just be careful that we're picking the right people. And, I think you need to be informed to do that. And sometimes there's no way of knowing. Power does corrupt. People that have the best intentions going in sometimes don't do what they're supposed to. And you can't be absolutely sure that that's going to happen. But,
And I'd like to bring another point.
Yeah.
I'd like to bring another point up. And that point is that this is what I think is also part of the problem. This is just Kathleen Gomez speaking. And I'm not basing it on any kind of statistical, you know, information other than what I've known in my life. And I think what happens is in politics is that the process to get on a ballot, the process to get elected is very, very grueling and very gruesome. Yeah. Standing outside and asking people to sign when you have to get 3,000 signatures, meaning really you need to get six, because for every one, every two, one might be bad. You have to get 6,000 signatures. Now, if you break that up in the time that they give you, what did they give? What did they give you in D.C.? Is it about 50, a month?
Yeah, 50 days approximately.
Okay.
A month and a half.
To get 5,000, that would be a month and a half. So you have to at least get 100 a day, right?
Yep.
To make like the 6,000 you need. Now, that may not sound like a lot, but when you're talking to, if only one out of every 20 people you address, that you actually make eye contact with, where you actually can say to them, are you a DC voter? Right. Only one of them signed. It is a very grueling process. It's you're standing on your feet, maybe 6-7 hours a day. You have people yelling obscenities to you, telling you to get out of their way, being rude. You definitely cannot have any problems with rejection when you do this. Now, what usually happens to be able to get these signatures is that you ask people favors. You either ask your whatever Democratic or Republican machine, do they, you know, will you have volunteers? Will you get your people to help me get signatures, because I'm one person, or maybe I have my family members that can't get out everywhere. So they go, all right, they help you get on the ballot. From that moment on, you are now owned by the machine. You have to. I mean, because now you owe them a favor. Right. They got you on the ballot, the basic first step of getting elected. So from that point on, they feel they owe you. So you go into, if you win your seat, then you go into this position owing people. And believe me, we know what that means. People work you, you know, because then you become, well, hey, you know, I got you in power and I can get you out. I'll never forget when I was working on the Pat Schroeder's Armed Services Committee, when the Israeli lobby, and maybe this is a little bit interesting to bring up at this point in time, but we were trying to get money to fund military families, you know, a dental plan, different things to make families' life a little easier. And so we were trying to take money within the armed services budget this bill and put the money into military families. So we were taking out of, you know, certain R&D bills. You know, when you look at an armed services bill, there's so many different line items, and whether it's R&D, military families, or, you know, research and all this stuff. I never realized that in a lot of these little mini budgets was aid to Israel. And I remember they came in, the Jewish lobby, and said to Pat Schroeder, had always been a friend of her, of them. When she wanted to divert some money, they said, you know, we will make sure you don't get elected. She says, well, what are you talking about? I've always been your friend, but I need to fund, you know, I need to find money to fund these certain items I want to do to better the lives of our military families. And I said, it doesn't matter. You vote and you try to take money away from this bill that gives us R&D money, we're going to make sure you don't get elected. So in a sense, she still went on, and we passed the Military Family Act of 1985, and she still got elected. But that's what happens in the system. So, you know, we were talking about, what do you do? What can you do to make the system better? And I thought you had a great idea about the, you know, and I'm against online voting, period. But if you're going to have it, maybe you should have a system in where people can go online after they do the research, figure out what kind of guy you are and what you've done, and sign your petition online.
Run out of ways to escape. You need a savior.
Well, obviously, the Republicans in Arizona and Phoenix have been listening to Kathleen, and they jammed our signal. So we're sorry to the Republicans. We're indebted to you. We're glad that you have nice roads. And right after the show, we'll take Kathleen out and say mean things to her.
This is my point, though. You know, it's amazing. We've become so dependent on this type of technology. And, you know, as the gentleman who helps us with our show was saying, it's being experienced on the internet and other things, you know, kind of like there's a glitch in a lot of things that are going on. We've become so dependent on this. What will happen to us if something like this just affects everyone and nobody can go on the internet? Nobody can use their computers or their phones or whatever. Can you imagine what a shock that would be to those young women who are constantly tuned in? Because that's the other thing we didn't mention. It is amazing, as we went to a couple of metro stops, to see, I think out of 9 out of 10 people were wired to their phone, you know, listening to music, you know, walking. I don't know how they're walking with all these people around, looking down at their phone, twittering or messaging or whatever it is they do. It is just astounding. It's rather kind of very scary, because it's like a sea of people who have become isolated in this little bubble. Heaven forbid that bubble bursts.
Yeah.
Then what's going to happen?
Us old geezers will take over again and be in a lot of trouble. But yeah, absolutely. You know, especially in a city where I think we notice it more, you and I, maybe Kathleen, in a city that's so self-absorbed to begin with. You know, we're all the most important people in the world here in the District of Columbia. You and I were talking earlier this morning, actually, about the fact that our kids would rather text us than talk to us on the phone. We don't get that. It seems to be so easy to just take a button and push it, and then voila, you've got a voice on the other end of the phone and you can have a conversation. But I think you came up with the reason. You know, I've always wondered why they do this, and I think you've come up with the reason that they can stay detached.
They're not committed.
They're not committed. If they're on the phone, you've got them. You can ask them questions. They can, you know, it's like call screening, you know, that you can call, you know, when they don't want to talk to you, you can call them and call them and call them and they don't answer. I think that's very interesting. And if the internet, maybe that's how we make our fortune, Kathleen. We do a movie about, you know, the internet going down and all the millennials out wandering around the world not knowing what to do
because
they can't get online. Yeah.
And they don't know how to have a conversation anymore. They don't know how to interact socially anymore. Right. It's just so astounding that I fear for what's going to happen to not just to us, but the whole world. And you know, I want to make a plea to everyone out there throughout all the 50 states of the United States of America, that when you see somebody on the side corner canvassing, asking you to stop for a second, sign a petition, at least stop and find out. I'm not saying you have to sign it because it may be something you may not believe in, but at least take a second to see what they're doing. Because let me tell you, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back or raise this up on a pedestal, but this is grassroots organization 101. This is the stepping, this is the beginning of democracy, is to have somebody spend their time to try to enlighten the people that the other students who walk by. Please just take a moment and find out what these people are doing, because they are, you know, they're volunteers. You know, we're definitely not paid. I know that's another way of doing it. You pay people to get signatures, which is not, you know, a very good way of getting them. But, you know, these are people who believe in an issue, a cause, or a person. And you at least, as a citizen, give them a moment. Find out what they're doing. And if you agree with what it is, or if it's just to put somebody on a ballot, for God's sake, do so. You have so many rights as an American citizen. At least practice the basic one.
Well, you know, we've had that. We've had several referendums in the District of Columbia. We had one recently on the legalization of marijuana. We've had one on budget autonomy. we've had many referendums. And you're right, you need to stop for a second and find out what people are doing. Find out Greenpeace is out there all the time getting people on board. There are people that push for education issues that are out there. And it's important to be a part of the process, because if you're not a part of the solution, you know, I hate to keep on throwing out these cliches, but, you know, this is what we were raised on in the 1960s and 70s. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And there's a lot of truth to that. You need to look into what's going on in the world. You need to stay informed. And it's more than just being on the internet. You know, now the internet's a great source of information, but you need to read newspapers. You need to listen to shows like ours. You need to interact with your neighbors. I mean, it's just incredible. When I grew up in a neighborhood, my grandmother she knew everybody in the neighborhood. She knew everybody that had lived there more than a year. In my neighborhood, I know all the neighbors on my block because I make an effort to. But beyond a block in each direction, I don't know a lot of people. And, you know, and I've been head of my community or neighborhood civic association for many years. And I've been involved in policies, been, you know, involved in all sorts of things. And still we've become so detached. People don't come together like they used to. You used to have to do it. If you wanted to find out what was going on in school, you couldn't sit down at your computer. You actually had to go to a PTA meeting. And when you went to a PTA meeting, you met the other parents, you know. And it's funny, today we're losing that. I know that I know all the parents of the kids that my kids went to school with, if they're in the same grade. You know, it's kind of funny because somebody will say to me, well, I had a daughter at Wilson High School. And I go, oh, well, how old is she? Well, she's 17. Well, I don't know you because my daughter's 16. I know all the, you know, I know all the parents of the 16-year-olds because we've done things together, you know, carpools and other stuff. Or I know all the 19-year-olds or 21-year-olds because that's the age of my other kids. But I don't know the 20-year-olds. And, you know, or somebody will say, oh, yeah, I remember him. What's his name? Jack, Joe. And I go, no, it's Nick. And they go, oh, yeah, Nick, you know, but. We really need to come together. And before we get off the air tonight, I want to say a couple of things. First, we're sorry about the technical difficulty we had. I hope that you stayed with us. There was about a 3 or 4 or 5 minute break there where the internet just went down. But I also want to pass on my condolences to the people that knew and cared about James Garner. He died today, and he was a great guy, I think. And I didn't know him personally, of course, but I certainly remember being a kid and watching him on Maverick and watching him on when he was the private detective and, you know, all the other shows he had and the several movies that he was in. In fact, The Americanization of Emily, which he was in with Julie Andrews, is one of my favorite movies. And I think he was a great guy. He always played good roles. He was a wholesome role model. Don't ever remember him being involved in any scandals. And I think that the world of entertainment is diminished today in his passing. So I just want to point that out and say my condolences go out to the Garner family and everybody that knew him and cared about him. And I'll give you the last word, Kathleen, because we're almost out of time.
Okay, well, again, I would only say to everyone who's listening and spread the word, please stop when somebody's on a corner and they're trying to get you to at least listen to what their issue is. And you have every right to say, well, I'm sorry, I don't believe in it. And that's great. It's just so means so much to have someone stop. And I there was a woman from Newark the other day who stopped. She goes, you know, I'd sign your petition because I canvassed for an issue in Newark and I know what you're going through. And I have to say to you, this is one of the most one of the really, it's a torturous, horrific thing to go through. She says, but I just want to say I admire you for doing it. And I said, well, I admire you for doing it too, because when it's like kind of like if you haven't been pregnant, you don't know what it's like. It's if you haven't gone through this process, you don't understand how gruesome it is and how much these people must have faith in what they're doing and believe in it, because you know, you have to have that passion to be able to do this every day until you get those numbers that you need to get your issue at least somewhere on some ballot for people to vote. So please, please, America, get involved in the process. Listen to the people who are passionate, who want to reach out to you. Take the time. And you know how many people said to us, oh, I'm busy, I got to run, I'm meeting somebody, I got to get my coffee, I got to go to the yoga class. Well, you know what? Maybe just stop. Take 3 minutes. That's all you need. And, you know, it just may start a process. It may start you getting more involved in getting people or getting the issues that affect you every day. So yeah. That's what I have to say. Thank you.
Okay. For well, thanks, America. And we'll see you next week. To everybody out there that listens to our show, we so much appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
Goodbye.
Okay, guys.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.
Give the people their right to vote.
Okay.